Excess number 12911, reel 3.
Canon Rossi, reel 3. You were saying about you found ways of...
I was able to communicate with some of the survivors of the Arandora Star. And it's from them that I learned some of the details about the sinking of the ship, which I mentioned in my book.
What kind of things did you find out?
Well, I found out that, first of all, the ship was camouflaged as a troop ship. Second, the ship was armed with anti-submarine guns. I found out that the lifeboats, some of the lifeboats anyway, were entangled in barbed wire, so that when actually did sink, they were not able to get near it. I did find out also that some, not to say it anyway, some of the people in charge of the ship had no experience of it. And when it came to the launching of the lifeboats, it was left more or less to a lot of German sailors who were on board. The first lifeboat actually was lowered by somebody else and was smashed against the side of the boat. The result was these men there who had experience, they took over and they seemed to cooperate or collaborate with the British anyway, somewhere or another, in launching the lifeboats and whatever rafts they had or anything like that. But I found also that there were, what do you call, great confusion, because it was early hours in the morning and they didn't know who was it, what was it, or anything. That's what the Bolognini was able to tell me. And they didn't even know how they survived or any. Some of them, they just found themselves in a boat on a raft or something like that. But there was no... Some of them just philosophically went down with the boat, just stood on top of the bridge and waited for the boat to go down. Didn't even make an effort. They just seemed to resign to the fact that that was the end of it. Can't say what else to say about Bolognini, but he was not keen to talk about it. That's one thing I found. None of them was keen to talk about it. One of the priests actually was there also, Father Tonker. He was one of the survivors. He would hardly talk or mention about the thing. The other priest died in it, Father Fracassi from England. He died. He was an elderly man, actually. A poor man who just he died in it. But that was what I learned there and then from Bolognini. Maybe something else now which escaped me. I'm not sure of it. But the point is, was there was no distinctive mark that this ship was carrying civilians. Moreover, it looked like that there were German sailors. Were they civilian or military? I don't know. But definitely there were German sailors on board. Again, if they were military people, they shouldn't have been with civilians. That was the other point. I mean, so I said, all these kind of things contribute to kind of uneasy feeling over the whole thing. The other thing was suggested, although I have no proof of it, that perhaps there were more soldiers than needed. Were there any conscripts going to Canada? I don't know. I mean, it's a guesswork. I mean, as I said, I wouldn't like to pronounce myself on it because I'm no proof of it. All I know is this, that when some of them came back from Canada, they traveled in the same ship as with other troops. I know this for a fact.
So was there any, was it possible to do anything about what you had learnt about the Arundhara Star?
Doing what?
Making some complaint or something?
To whom? Nobody will listen to anyone. I mean, the Italian government completely disinterested of us. I'm quite honest about this. They didn't have the slightest interest. Never had any message from them. The Red Cross, the first only time I saw it was in Berry. And the man interviewed me in front of the major. I couldn't speak in front of the major. The next contact we had was with the nation in charge of Italian interest, I think it was Brazil. And he came to visit us in Island Man. And we couldn't get talking to him. So who are you going to complain to? And there's no question of complaining. It's a question of just accepting the fact that it's happening. And war is war, and that's it. We didn't go shouting and bawling or anything. We just were sorry we left all of, I mean, even the officer who spoke to me about was a Scotsman from Greenock, I think he was, although he was stationed in England. He was nearly in tears when he told me about it. The padre said that we lost a lot of good friends, and I didn't know what he was talking about, first of all. And then explained to me what happened. But as I said, that's a tragedy, the Arundhara Star. The people have been writing on it. The one who has the most of the information is that Star of Shame. But they are, I would say, the German side. And they went a great deal of research to find out all about it. He interviewed hundreds of people. The Italian government never took an interest.
Was this major in charge of Worth Mill an intimidating sort of character then?
He was a rascal. He got 14 years jail later for stealing. He stole off the internee a lot of gold guineas. You know, the men had the gold guineas in their chain and all that. He stole a number of other things. The thing came to light in a very simple way, and indirectly I was involved in it. Although I didn't know about this, they call this jail sentence or litter. I was in this office, and one day one of the officers came on and left then, and he said to me, "Padre, you take care of this typewriter." I said, "You're right, sir." Well, the typewriter was Norwegian characters. You know, diaries and all that. So, all right, I put them under a table, covered, and everything fine. Later on came to light that this typewriter belonged to a man who had a diplomatic passport. So I had to give it back. So they said to me, "Padre, where is the typewriter?" I said, "It's over there, sir. I'll go and get it." The typewriter was not there. Where is it gone? Oh, a search everywhere. Nobody knew anything about. So they began to search the quarters of the men living in it, and they found the typewriter in the house of the major, at least a quarter of the major. So he was charged with stealing. And then also other things came to light when they began to search his quarters. They also found other things. So I believe later on he got 14 months or something like that. He was dismissed and in prison for 14 months. He had a blind one eye, but the other one
patch.
Glasses. It was one black lens.
And Whitchurch in Shropshire. Near what kind of a camp was this?
Near the border of Wales it was. It's a canvas. We're under canvas. 8 to a tent. And I was landed with 7 German boys. Yeah, fairly young, fairly old young people. And the only trouble was that I was rather tall. And as we to put the feet toward the center pole, I couldn't get to it. So I had to put my feet outside the opening in the side. I slept like that. But weather wasn't too bad until it began to rain, and then it began really being uncomfortable. And the condition were not too bad. I mean, as you can imagine, under canvas was not very comfortable, but still we could get on with it. But again, as far as washing or anything, was just a line with some taps, you know, and the corrugated iron underneath, and you wash there best that we could. For laundering, it was a big, huge they call container with boiling water, you see, and each one tied his garments to a stick, and you lowered inside the boiling water, and after being steeped for a while, you took them out again, went and rinsed it up to the tap.
How did you find the German internees?
Most of them friendly. Most of them friendly. They were very annoyed, actually, because they were friendly aliens. We were enemy aliens. You know, the Italian were enemy aliens. The Germans, Jews, they were all German Jews, except 3. One was a Czech boy, was a Catholic, and 2 were Austrian priests, Jesuits. They were the only 3 I knew was Catholic in the camp. The other were all Germans, Jews, but Austrian, Hungarian, all the Central Europe in a part, you know. Most of them were quite friendly because I played football with them. I was very keen in football. I played football, and they were very keen to have me in a team. See, each section had its own team, you know. And the only was that at the head of the camp, there were one in particular member was Hungarian. I don't know what nationality was the other. Were Jews, but communist. And they had it for me. And they came one day and they asked me. No, yes, I didn't know anything about it. See, it was a list. Every day was put up for duties in a camp, you know, for cleaning, sweeping, and things like that, you see. I didn't even know such a list existed, because when I arrived in a camp, they had been there before me. So, taken for granted, I was just put in a tent there and taken for granted I knew all about it. I didn't know. And one day I was lying down and on a palace, the vice commandant of the camp, the German or Hungarian Jew, came up and he said to me, "Mr. Rossi, you didn't report for duty." I said, "What duty? You are due to wash the latrine today." I said, "Excuse me, sir." I said, "When I see the rabbi in his knees washing the latrine beside me, I'll go. Because I'm a minister of religion, even if you don't acknowledge it." Oh, he was quite angry over the whole thing. And he went back. And the commandant, another Jew, came up. And he went for me. So these boys in the tent were all siding with me. The Jews himself, they were all siding with me. So I knew I was on safe ground. So when he started bawling and shouting, I said to him quite straight, "Son, the last man walked out in 2 feet out of this tent. If you want to do the same, better start walking now." He went away. I never heard any more.
So this was a communist element amongst the Jews.
were some communists among them. Not that they were welcomed by the other, by all means. Most of the Jews there, they were just, they have been trapped in this country because quite a lot of them were in a process of going to South America, to the States, to Australia, and they were really using Britain as a springboard to get abroad. See, they couldn't go directly from Germany, as far as I can make out. I want to take what they told me, but they could get a visit, a passport into Britain, and then from there they went, quite a few of them spoke to me, boys in a tent with me particularly. They explained to me the whole thing, because the other didn't talk a great deal. I must say they were not very communicative. I don't know why, but those who played football were all very friendly with me. And no trouble with them, whatever, except this particular incident I mentioned.
What proportion of Germans and Italians were there in the camp?
I was the only Italian. I see, when they took me from Bury, they closed down Bury. They didn't know where to send me. They sent me down there. I don't know why. How? I don't know. I said, what chaos.
And the man in charge of the camp, how did he compare with the major?
Oh, yeah, quite different. Quite different. He wasn't much in contact with us. I say this, very little in contact with us. But it was not, he didn't make things difficult for us. I say this. He left the running of the camp to commandants, at least our own commandants, you know.
And so conditions were much better there?
Well, from the point of view, they were more relaxed. There was not much tension. But as I said, it's not always very pleasant, because they had their own tension among the Jews. There were those who were pro-British and those who were anti-British. I mean, some resented very much of being treated like that. Others were rather, well, taking for granted would be treated like that. I don't know how you say that, but something of that kind.
Guards there?
The guards hardly saw them. They were out in the perimeter. We used to. As a matter of fact, they were bombed when they were out there. Well, what happened was this. I believe one night the officer came back and he left the hell light of his car on. And they were shining on a railway which was not far from the camp. The German bomber were coming back from Liverpool. They saw this thing shining, and as usual, the bomber, they had four or five small bombs in reserve for emergency when they traveled back. So the fella, nothing else to do, just dropped bombs down. And were very, very fortunate, because he put the bomb across in a line. And we heard it. I heard it myself. I was still awake. It was about maybe 11, 12 o'clock at night. I don't know what time it was, but 1, 2, 3, and was nearer, 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 nearer. And I, after the fifth bomb, I never forget it, I took a blanket, I put over my face, and I waited for the next one, which never came. And I believe the last bomb exploded right in the middle of the tent. Fortunately, that company was on guard that particular night, so there was no one injured. But the sentry were the same. I mean, the only time we came really more in contact with the sentry or anything was an island man. Then we were dealing with them more or less. But the other were rather distant. You know, they were kept in a perimeter and hardly spoke to us. They were used to. Like there again, sometimes they kind of trying to tease them one thing or another, you know, the usual carry on. There's nothing else to do, the men, so not to but there was no...
Were there any Red Cross visits to Whitchurch?
Not that I know. Not that I know. The only one came there, I don't know who was there, was some of the Jewish leaders. I think they came along. Because I remember well that day all the Jews got their cap on and off they went to the tent where they were meeting.
So he was some kind of rabbi.
There was a protest because they said they were Orthodox Jews and they would not eat the normal meal. They want a kosher kitchen. So there was some arrangement made for them to have kosher.
How long do you think you were at Whitchurch?
Let's see now, June, July, probably a month, something like that.
A month, 1 month?
And probably a month, August, I would say.
August 1940?
40, and then I went to Isle of Man.
What happened to you there?
Well, within a train, you know, from Whitchurch. We're all transported away to Isle of Man. And I was sent to an Italian camp. They went to another German camp, you know. And I remember well the journey because we didn't know where we were going. We were never told. And there were no station. The name of the station were all obliterated during the war. You know, there was no indication of any kind. All I knew, I landed at Liverpool. And the only reason I knew Liverpool was a port, because they were all half-sunken ship all over the place inside the port, you know. And then we knew we were going to Isle of Man then. And I remember well that in the train, they gave us a loaf of bread, one for each compartment. And we didn't have a knife, didn't have anything. So I asked the sentry, who was in every compartment, was a sentry, for a loan of the Bennett to slice the loaf so each one could get a share of it.
Whereabouts were you taken on the island?
I was taken to Douglas, the Metropole camp.
Metropole?
Metropole.
Why was it called the Metropole camp?
Well, the hotel was called Metropole. There were two hotels in the front, the Palace and the Metropole. And I was taken to the Metropole camp. There were also other camps in Ramsey, Peel, Onken, various different camps. But I was taken to Metropole. Why, I don't know, but as far as I make out, was the Metropole was considered a more, I would say, dangerous as far as the people concerned in it, because a lot of younger people were in it. See, they made the idea that the younger people were more dangerous than the older ones, because they were brought up under the fascists. And a lot of them had never been a fascist, because they'd been brought up in this country. So...
And so the camp was just a hotel?
The hotel.
Was there any barbed wire?
Oh, yes. Oh, plenty. Plenty of barbed wire. Plenty of barbed wire there was. Outside in the main entry and everything. It was all... But, I mean, no one would ever dream of trying to escape or anything. But it was then that we began to get a more kind of social terms with the guards.
How do you mean?
Well, we're able to talk to them. I was just saying the other day, in Isle of Man, there was no rationing during the war. So we were able, I wasn't because I didn't have it, but those who had some money were able to slip some money to the guards and get in fresh butter and get cheese and things like that, which were coming from Ireland to Isle of Man. And I think probably the officers of SPED or somebody like that, I don't know if they knew anything, but they seem to be quite freely moving this kind of thing.
How many people do you think there were at Metropole Ken?
Oh, I think so, over 1,000 there were.
1,000?
I think so.
It must have been a huge hotel.
Oh, it was a big, big hotel. There were 2, 3, or 4 in every room. You know, it was quite a large. And remember, there were 3 sections. I don't know how many, there were 200, 300 in each section, something like that. And then, next to it, there was another small hotel called Dodworth. And I was based in that hotel, which was part of Metropole Camp. And that was used as a, what do you call it, a hospital, or something like that, or that, for the beds of sick or anything like that. And I got a little room there in that Dodworth. That's a, more or less a chapel into it.
To the sick?
To the whole camp and the sick in particular, but I was particularly in charge of the sick.
Who was in charge of Metropole?
Oh, and a very nice fellow, an officer, I can't remember the name. Was quite likeable guy. I remember one day, that's a long story, but anyway, I was saying mass. And usually what we did was, as traditional, we collect some money for buying wine, breads, candles, all these things required for the mass. So they went round with a plate, you see, and a complaint was put in by someone, but I don't like to mention, but anyway, someone put in a complaint that the priests were profiteering of the internees. And
so a slip of paper was put on the, a piece of paper was put
no,
on
no, I went up to the commandant, the complaint to the commandant. So that's what I was told, because the commandant sent for me. I was more or less, although there were other priests, I was more or less looked upon as a representative of it. So they sent for me and asked me what was happening, and I explained to him what was it that we did buy these things, and every week gave them an account of what we did spend, and any money left over was used for mass intention to be offered for them, their dead one or dear one, whatever it may be. See? But anyway, there was a commandant came along to see one day, and he stood at the back of the little chapel, the room we used as a chapel, you see. And one of the young men was in charge of the plate. So he went around, as usual, and went also to the commandant. And the commandant looked down, so he kept shaking it until the commandant put a hand in his pocket and put some coin in it. So he walked away after. It was quite... There was one fellow who was a real nasty piece of work in a camp. Was a Maltese, Le Borg, Lieutenant Le Borg. He was real nasty.